Keep up to date with the latest WSL action and the biggest interviews.
You'd be delighted, Karen, if you just had Katie doing full on attack.
This is the best team I've seen in weeks. Get her up there.
Subscribe to the Koi Gig podcast stream on the OTB Sports app now.
Very welcome along to The Snap, your American football show here on Off The Ball. We are brought to you in association with the Aer Lingus College Football Classic. Tickets are available now for Northwestern versus Nebraska at the Viva Stadium on August 27, 2022. Get updates on all things American football by signing up to our newsletter, otbsports.com/clubgridiron. Time to welcome in my co-host with the mostest, Cian Fahey. Cian, how are things?
I'm good. How are you? Happy Christmas and to you and to everyone else listening. Like, are we a week early? Are we okay to say that now?
It's somewhat preemptive, but I've been doling out a few happy Christmases this week, so I think we have to get into the mood of it. When we start getting into next week territory, I think it's totally fair game. And as we record here, Cian, you will know there's been a slew of cancellations in the Premier League with games being called off left, right and centre. But NFL, for now, as is their wont, ploughs on, and we'll be grateful for all this NFL football next weekend.
Yeah, actually, Christmas Eve, because we're doing Saturdays this year, I believe. But Christmas Eve NFL football was like the originator for me following the NFL. So it's always like a nostalgic, I guess is the word, time of year. I remember, especially when you get a team like Green Bay playing and there's just snow everywhere. And like I had Brett Favre back in the day making incredible touchdown throws in the weather to Greg Jennings and Donald Driver and all these guys. It's probably a little bit more produced now than it was back then. It's a little bit more structured and controlled. Back then, it always felt like a bit of a miracle, a bit of magic. But it's great when Christmas falls on a weekend. Well, actually, it's great for the NFL when Christmas falls on a weekend, because those two things coincide, even though Christmas is probably generally better when it's during the week. But we'll look over that. I can't wait. I'm looking forward to the next couple of weeks, and there's a couple of good games coming up as well.
Yeah, that little sweet spot for US sports fans where, famously, NBA has some cracking Christmas Day games also. So you'll have your fill of it if you're tired of talking to your family in the afternoon. Those games tend to come on just
in time. Jeez, we went straight there.
There you go. Listen, I'm only saying what everyone else is thinking. So, but like, it is an interesting one. Like, I remember last year was the Saints and the Vikings, and Alvin Kamara scored like 6 touchdowns or something. So
seven, I think it was.
7, yeah. So often these games can be a bit underwhelming, but as you said, there can be signature moments as well. So that's the kind of thing that...
To be fair, I was just watching Jamal Charles, I think it was on this day, where he scored 5 touchdowns, I think, and he ran for 200, or caught 200 yards, whatever it was, against the Raiders. And whenever I see that, because you mentioned Alvin Kamara, when Alvin Kamara did that last year, you kind of look at it and you go, Alvin Kamara is so good, shouldn't he like do that every single game? Because when you're watching it, there's no reason for it. It's just Alvin Kamara being amazing. And I don't know, it just came into my head there when you mentioned it, but I was watching Jamal Charles earlier, and my God, I forgot how good Jamal Charles was.
Yeah, and the proliferation of the running back position, where they seem so drag and drop, like replaceable, where like when these lads actually stand out, the likes of Alvin Kamara, and even you think of like Ezekiel Elliott in his first season when he was brilliant as a rookie, and obviously Derrick Henry, all these kinds of guys. So to actually stand out at a position which has become a little bit homogenous is quite impressive. Unfortunately, Cian, we have to start on a somewhat somber note, and that is the passing of Demaryius Thomas since our last show, and you know, just utterly grim. I think the latest is it was a medical incident which caused him to be found at his home, died aged 33, and it's difficult to verbalise, you know, what a tragic loss this is. Obviously a hugely impactful player on the field, but what has come to light and was probably known by Denver Broncos fans, and needless to say those close to him, is the amazing work he did off the field. So a huge loss, and just gone too soon.
Yeah, speaking of AFC West legendary players and kind of cult heroes, Jamal Charles and Demaryius Thomas would be on a very similar level as players. Demaryius, I didn't realize this. I never really heard a huge amount about him over the years. He was always kind of quiet. He wasn't like one of these diva wide receivers who always spoke up and had to be talked about and made everything about him. And so when you hear all the stories afterwards about all the kids' charities he worked with and all the time he spent with kids, and I think it was Tyler Columbus who has an incredible photograph, an incredible story of after the Super Bowl, they've won and they're in the bus and there's a massive partying going on, everyone's delighted, and all Demaryius Thomas does for the whole bus ride is play with Tyler Columbus's son, and he's sat in his lap and everything and he's just smiling, and you can see that's where he wanted to be. He didn't really want the big limelight of all the big party and all that kind of stuff, and that it was really heartwarming to see. And it's And to be honest with you, like, the NFL as a sport, more often than not, we have negative stories to talk about. More often than not, we have arrests or stuff like that going on off the field. And even just this week, there's a big CTE story with a former Raiders player. So when you do get a story like this, it's really, really nice to have and point to. But if we then talk about him as a player, he was a phenomenal wide receiver. Now, everyone goes back to that Tim Tebow play. And personally, I hate that Tim Tebow play because it forced us to watch Tim Tebow for a couple of years. But what Demaryius Thomas did to Ike Taylor on that play is insane. Ike Taylor was a really good man coverage cornerback. Demaryius is coming off injury. It's the start of his career. I think he had a torn ACL initially and then came back late in the year. And he just runs right away from Ike Taylor against Dick LeBeau's defense, leaves Ryan Clark awake in his dust. And he kept doing stuff like that. He got to play with Peyton Manning then. It was him, Emmanuel Sanders at first stage, Eric Decker first stage, Wes Welker was there. And he was always like the linchpin go-to guy. And when you hear Peyton Manning talk about how good he was, you realize that maybe he's a Hall of Fame player. I'm not sure he's definitely an actual Hall of Famer because he's behind the likes of Andre Johnson and Calvin Johnson for me. But the fact that it'll be posthumously now, I think he will actually get in. And I wouldn't complain too much. It's not like Hines Ward making the Hall of Fame. It's not like it's a guy who doesn't deserve to be there, but it's someone who might get a little bit of a bump just because of what's happened.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, police haven't necessarily specified the issue, but Thomas's cousin, LaTanya Bosignor, told the Associated Press that his family believe he died of a seizure, and they were notified by police around 9 p.m. local time, I believe, last Friday. So just an utterly tragic thing. And we talk about his life trajectory, and as you said, quite a down-to-earth fella, and you wouldn't have heard all that much from him. But when you look into his backstory, like, he was a child, his mother and grandmother were sent to prison on drugs charges, and to maybe drag himself up from those low ebbs and make himself not only a phenomenal player, but by all accounts, a phenomenal person also. So just a huge loss. And that Broncos team, you know, were fairly significant in their way. You know, almost the year before they won the Super Bowl, you remember the unbelievable points tallies they used to put up, and he was a key cog of that. You mentioned some of the names there, and you have Julius Thomas as well, that little tandem. So Peyton Manning has a lot to be thankful for these lads in terms of getting that second Super Bowl ring.
Do you remember week one that year? I don't remember what was what happened in that week one.
Week one of?
The Broncos' first year.
Yes.
Yeah, can you remind me?
This is true. This is when the Ravens were demolished by
I think it was 50 points in the end.
Yeah, well, to be fair, the entire Ravens Super Bowl winning team retired or left the team before that game. But thanks for reminding me that, Keane. I'd managed to banish that from my memory. But
don't worry, we can talk about Lamar Jackson's injury instead.
But it's funny, like, the in the end, it was the defense that won the Broncos that Super Bowl. But it was the offense that gave them the platform almost, because Manning was actually pretty decent at the early part of that season. I remember they destroyed the 49ers on a Sunday night game and this kind of thing. So, it's just a sad note, unfortunately. We have to mark Demaryius Thomas's passing. If we move on to what we talked about at the end of last week's show, Keane, and that was our competition game between the Packers and the Bears, and the spread was 12 points. And we got there in the end. The Packers won by 15, but it didn't exactly pan out as we expected. It was quite a topsy-turvy game, especially in that first half.
Aaron Rodgers is typical, just owns the Bears. While it might have jumped around a little bit, it always just has that feeling of inevitability with the Packers when they play the Bears. And the quality of the Bears as a team is just not really there, to be honest. I didn't pay a huge amount of attention to this game in retrospect because, for the very reason I just mentioned, it seems automatic with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, so we'll have more details on this week's competition game, but before that, it's time for the Pick 6. Yeah, a little bit of symmetry to kick us off here, Keane. You'll recall when Urban Meyer got the Jacksonville Jaguars job, our pun of the week was Urban Myth, and I think that myth has been busted here. Like, he's kind of been exposed in the way we kind of framed 12 months ago, and this is an unmitigated disaster. We can go through the laundry list of stuff that has gone wrong in terms of indiscretions, the incident at the bar, the not flying home with his team, the incidents with his coaches and players, and then the more minor stuff like bringing Tim Tebow in and the controversy that came with that, or just the brouhaha that came with it, needlessly so. Like, he made preseason, which should be fairly straightforward, a nightmare for those Jags players. So I think they're glad to see the back of him, and as an NFL project, I'm not too sorry to see him go either.
Yeah, and generally, as a person, based on his history, we're not too bad. Sorry to see him go either. I think most of us expected this, but not to be accelerated the way it was. Even the Jaguars owner didn't really seem to want to make this move. He was very reluctant to do it because he could have done it a couple of times already this year, even though it's only 13 weeks into his first season in charge. You mentioned that list, and to me, I think that's a list we have to actually break down and go through, because if you were trying, and I'm not saying he was trying to get fired, but if you were trying to get fired, this would be the blueprint to do it. Like, let's go back to the very first thing he did. In February, he hired Chris Doyle as the team's director of sports performance. Doyle was accused of making racist comments and belittling players during his time at Iowa, and he resigned before he ever really even started the job. In August, you bring in Tim Tebow from the baseball minor leagues. No one had any interest in Tim Tebow at all. The only real reason Meyer could justify bringing him in is Tebow played for him in college, so they were friends. Tebow came in, tried to play tight end, literally didn't block guys because he didn't know what he was doing. He wasn't close to a college tight end, never mind an NFL tight end. He spent a first-round pick on Travis Etienne out of Clemson, so he added him to his offense, an offense where the only strength they had was running back. Etienne came in as a running back, would have just caused problems with James Robinson, but he actually got injured in the preseason, so they got nothing from that pick regardless. But then, even with Etienne gone, they still had problems with Robinson. For whatever reason, Urban Meyer did not like Robinson and did not get along with Robinson and stopped using him at different times for seemingly no reason. He preferred Carlos Hyde, another former player of his in college, and he forced him into games even when it was made more sense for Robinson to play. There was problems on the sideline of how he handled that. After he drafted Etienne, he literally came out and said, oh, we wanted Kadarius Toney, who the New York Giants took. And you're like, you just brought a guy into your team and you're telling him that you didn't actually want him, you wanted another guy ahead of you. That happens every single year. Nobody ever says it because you can't. That's not how you manage a work environment. Moving on then into August again, he publicly, another public comment, he said, we made decisions based on the vaccine status of players. NFL wasn't okay with this, straight away investigation into it. I imagine most teams make decisions like that, but they didn't come out and say it because you obviously can't just come out and say it. Still in the preseason, he held a quarterback competition between Trevor Lawrence, the number one pick, the generational prospect that they were rebuilding the whole team around, with Gardner Minshew. That means half of Trevor Lawrence's snaps are going to Gardner Minshew. You can justify that if you're going to say, oh, everything's a competition and Minshew will be our backup and he'll be valuable. But then they traded Gardner Minshew. So he threw away 50% of his preparation snaps for Lawrence for no good reason. You mentioned in week four, he's Mr. Ohio, essentially. He's beloved in Ohio. So when they went to Cincinnati and they went to the Bengals in week four, he stayed there after the game, went to a restaurant and went out to a bar, was subsequently videoed at a bar with a young woman who wasn't his wife and had to apologize for this. This became a big issue within Jacksonville and a big story around the NFL. Recently, there's been reports that he called all of his assistant coaches losers. He said they've won nothing. They're worse than his staff at Bowling Green, which is a small college team that's not going to have a stacked group of NFL-level coaches. He fought with Marvin Jones, reportedly. And Marvin Jones, by all accounts, is the nicest man in the NFL, has no interest in arguing or having a problem with anyone, spent years in Detroit on some of the worst teams you'll hear about, and was a perfect leader. He kicked Josh Lambeau, reportedly. That's just come out this week. He did that during the preseason and ultimately is what led to him losing his job. He was asked after a game recently about Andreas Cisco, a defensive player for the Jaguars, and about his growing workload. Meyer responded, yeah, he's doing well with his extra snaps. Cisco had played zero snaps in that game. So he wasn't actually paying attention to his team on game days. He wasn't engaged with them at all. The team itself was never prepared for specific opponents. They came out and did essentially the same thing every single week. So it looked like a team where the head coach just had his feet up and didn't really care. You didn't really see a huge amount of passion from him on the sidelines. He was very kind of happy to accept his losing, which led to them losing 9 games out of their 11 so far this year, which is more games than he lost in all 7 years at Ohio State. He only lost 7 in 7 years at Ohio State. He lost 9 in the NFL. By all accounts, this is the biggest disaster any NFL coach has ever had coming into an NFL season. He didn't even make the full season. And there are coaches who have come into the league, lost 15 games, who have done more or who have come out of it looking better than Urban Meyer has. And you have to consider, this guy has one of the greatest resumes a college coach can have. And whether anyone will be interested in hiring him now, hard to tell, because this is going to tarnish him a lot.
Yeah, it was just ego-driven from the get-go, and it was very good aggregation there, Kane. I think you've summed it up very well in terms of the detail of how this all unfolded, but it was sort of foreshadowed from very early on, just the way he carries himself. I know it can fly in college when you've got that more of a CEO vibe, but when, as we've discussed on the show before, these players like off the field are businesses in their own right, and on the field, you know, I've gotten to a level where, you know, they can be autonomous and know what's right and what's wrong, so they're not going to be so malleable and be told what to do. If, like, it's not his way or the highway type thing. These lads need to have a bit of independence in how decisions are made, and he just didn't seem on board with that at all. The Lambo.
I was just going to say, there's a right level of arrogance required to be a coach in professional sports. Like, if you look at Klopp, when he starts giving out about officials and he starts complaining, it's like, it's a little bit off-putting, but he has that line where he's not like dismissing other people, or he's not isolating his players or condemning the people he needs to win. With Meyer, it always felt like that level of arrogance had just gone through the roof and was completely out of control. And when the reports came out about him calling his own assistant coaches losers, it was like, yeah, this is everything we all thought he was behind the scenes.
Yeah, the Josh Lambo one was particularly funny.
Madness.
It's just the incident of kicking him when he's doing his stretches before training. It's like, and Lambo was asked to describe the severity of the kick, and he rated it a 5 out of 10. And I was just trying to, in my mind, trying to think what how sore that would be, or what a 10 out of 10 would be, what a 1 out of 10 would be. But Josh Lambo as a kicker would know better than most keen, I'm sure. But just before we move,
There's a famous story about Percy Harvin having a problem with him in college, and safe to say, Urban Meyer was not considered to be this hardline, strict head coach, this guy who wanted to prove himself as a tough guy in college with college athletes. So this development with NFL, with the NFL players, is absolutely bizarre. But I'm pretty sure he wouldn't have done that to anyone else who wasn't the kicker he was going to cut. Like, there's no chance he was walking up to Josh Allen or any of the wide receivers or any of the running backs and kicking them. He knew the kicker wasn't going to come after him. Whereas if another player, like, even if that kicker went after him, like, it would have been very, very interesting, because kickers aren't considered valuable. Maybe they'd have just cut the kicker and just sided with the head coach. But that kind of thing is so unusual and so unheard of. You'd probably have to go back to the 1980s or 70s to find something comparable.
Yeah, and the detail there is that he didn't deny it and said his recollection of the incident varies from that of Lambo. So he's basically admitting that it happened, but maybe just perceptions were slightly different. Before we move off the Jags, where are they at now? Like, I know they have to hit the reset button again, but a few decent players there. The Trevor Lawrence experiment has certainly not gone the way they would have wanted it to, but are they like a good coach away from getting back on track, or what's your assessment of them?
Well, Daryl Bevel is taking over, I believe. And Daryl Bevel, for interim job at least, not for the long term, he should understand how to work with Trevor Lawrence, because Trevor Lawrence has the same peaks and valleys in terms of his skill set as Russell Wilson. Like, he's a deep ball thrower who's athletic, who can get out and run. So what you'd like to see them is to start moving Lawrence around a little bit more, make it a short and shot play offense, so he's not making these underneath or intermediate passes over the middle where linebackers can jump his passes and disrupt the play. So if they just make small changes to their offense, it could build big rewards. Like, Lawrence threw 4 interceptions last weekend because he was a sitting duck, basically, where the pass rush could come after him on third and long, and he was getting confused by it. One of the interceptions he threw straight to a defensive lineman because they showed blitz and dropped out late, and Lawrence just couldn't read it. And those are the situations you want to keep him out of. Defensively, they're actually not that bad. They're pretty good defensively. It's just offensively, it's a mess. And just have someone come in and rely on their better players. Like, get the ball to the likes of LaFisca Chenault, get the ball to Marvin Jones, help Lawrence out with play design, use James Robinson because he's your best player. And that will move them to maybe even a below average offense, which would be enough to actually make them more competitive than they are right now. Because, look, they're 2-9. They're not going to be a playoff team. They're not going to contend anywhere. They're not going to do anything for the remainder of this year. But what you can do is set the foundations in for what you're going to be moving forward. And that's what Lawrence needs now. He needs some direction. He needs some structure, because he obviously hasn't had it to this point.
On to number 2 in the pick 6, and the LA Rams showing signs of life, Keane, and evidence once more that this is a very long season and we can't jump to any conclusions, because teams have, as you said, peaks and valleys. And, you know, the Rams have seemingly found their groove again. I know it's only one game, but, you know, a decent win over one of the top-ranked teams in the whole NFL, and most pointedly, a nice showing from Cooper Kupp, who's on a bit of a trend-setting run at the moment, on course to be a Triple Crown wide receiver this campaign, and also Odell Beckham showing signs of life. Granted, we'll get to his COVID status in a moment, but just in terms of what the Rams showed up against Arizona is quite impressive.
Yeah, I think the Rams have had such an up-and-down rollercoaster type of season. Like, those 3 losses in a row before the Jaguars game 2 weeks ago, that really kind of dampened the expectations and took away the optimism. Von Miller, the trade, hasn't really done anything for them yet. They lost Robert Woods, which was huge. But the setup of the team and the consistency of the team, when you think about it, like, Matthew Stafford is who he is, and he's going to make these horrible mistakes. He's going to hold you back. But what you saw last week against the Cardinals is they also have this level of talent, even without Jalen Ramsey in that game. They have this level of talent there where they can compete with anyone, and on their day, they will be able to beat anyone. And Odell is now a part of that because his touchdown was a slant on the backside when he was isolated on the narrow side of the field, a defense blitz, so he was left one-on-one. And if he's one-on-one, it's an immediate touchdown for Stafford, and it's an easy play for him to make. It's not the same as having Calvin Johnson in his prime years and years ago because he can't just throw the ball up in the air, but it's essentially the same impact for the quarterback because his read becomes so much easier because Odell's right there. And then Cooper Kupp during that game against the Cardinals was everywhere. He lined up in the slot, he lined up out wide, he lined up in the backfield, he caught a couple of passes over the middle, would run option routes underneath, was running deeper routes. And then you also had Beckham breaking off a huge play on a mesh design where the play was purposely called to get him into space underneath. He turns upfield and sprints for a huge gain. You're just seeing the level of athleticism in both of those receivers, and then what McVay can get out of Stafford on their good days and on their good plays. The talent is definitely there, and I know that's kind of an obvious thing based on everything we've knew coming into the season, but we haven't seen it often enough, and we haven't seen it against the better teams at any point this year prior to last week. So it was a really important game for them, a really uplifting game for them, especially because Darrell Henderson was out as well. So you've got like Sony Michel coming out of the backfield, who is a fine runner, but he's not explosive at all. So they need, and they have Tyler Higbee, a tight end, who doesn't really have any explosiveness either. So they needed Van Jefferson, they needed Odell Beckham, and they needed Cooper Kupp to have those big games that they had. So at the very least, they're a really interesting and kind of fun, exciting team. You're going to get some drama in them from the playoffs, no matter who they're playing.
Yeah, and just on Kupp, just to dig into the stats a little bit. So I mentioned his Triple Crown status. The last person to lead these categories by the end of the season was Steve Smith in 05. So just the numbers are 113 receptions. That's first in the NFL. 1,489 receiving yards, also first in the NFL, and he tops the NFL in touchdown receptions with 12. So I know it's a fun one to debate who the best wide receiver in the league is. Like Devontae Adams has missed time, and we'll get on to DeAndre Hopkins in a moment. But it's hard to argue that Cooper Kupp's got himself in that conversation. He's arguably the number one at the moment.
He's not to me, and the reason for it is very simple. He gets an awful lot of help that other receivers don't get. Sean McVay has so many plays that are designed to get him open, and this isn't to devalue him as a player. It's just I always remember this with Colin Kaepernick. When Colin Kaepernick had a great start to his career, I was kind of sat there going, he's not as good as all the hype is, because of the way the offense was set up, it was perfect to him. And he was playing at this certain level that expanded his stats and emphasized his positives and took away his negatives. And then Colin Kaepernick's career went in a different direction and his reputation went too far to the other extreme. So my opinion of Colin Kaepernick went from underrating him and underappreciating him based on everyone else's view of him. And then I became someone who was massively overrating him or overappreciating him, even though my opinion of him had never actually changed. It had just gone to extremes and different levels based on the production. And that's the same thing that's happening with Cooper Kupp right now. The production is massive because they chose to emphasize one of their better receivers. Like, the fact that he's doing this says he's a really, really good receiver, a really talented receiver, but he's not DeAndre Hopkins. He's not going to go out there and dominate a cornerback in a one-on-one situation on every single play. He's not going to beat a cornerback in 10 different ways that DeAndre Hopkins can beat a cornerback. If I ask DeAndre Hopkins to run an option route underneath, he'll do that just as well as Cooper Kupp does. If I ask DeAndre Hopkins to run a fade in a tight area in the end zone, he'll do that brilliantly. Cooper Kupp can't do that. He's not big enough to do that. He's strong and he's fast and he's got great ball skills, but he's not going to dominate cornerbacks in one-on-one scenarios. So what does Sean McVay do? He keeps him out of those scenarios. He puts him in positions where he's going to be effective, where he's going to win. So it's not really even a criticism. It's just a context of his performances. And the other aspect of this is these records are now all meaningless because we've got an extra regular season game. I feel like those guys who we used to talk about in 1972 when the season was 12 years, or the season was 12 games long, and they don't respect any of the records from the last 20 years because there's an extra 4 games. Now I'm like, yeah, but it used to be 16 games. So if he breaks the record this year, now we'll just be lying to ourselves about what really happened. Either way, I think he's having a great, great season. I think he's a really talented receiver, and this will probably be the best season of his career, which isn't exactly a problem because it's a great season. But I just can't put him, like, there's a list of wide receivers who are more talented and more effective than he is. He's, even though he's still outstanding.
Yeah, I suppose if you're looking through the fantasy football prism and he's the guy getting all the numbers, it's an easy one to fall into and pedestal him up there. But like, if he's not number one, he's certainly in the mix. And I don't think when he came into the NFL, he would have been pegged for those heady heights. But we should mention...
Well, here's a great one for you. Here's a great question for you. Who would you prefer to have in your team, Stephon Diggs or Cooper Kupp?
I think I'd take Diggs. I'd also take like Devontae Adams and Justin Jefferson, but I think they're better players. Like I'm almost more impressed by what Cooper Kupp has managed to achieve. I know to your point, he's got an excellent coach and he's schemed open a lot of the time, but I think he doesn't quite have the raw materials that the others have, and you know, has been a hugely impactful player. Like even when he wasn't one of the preeminent players in the team, like even that Super Bowl run, he kind of, before he got injured, he was right up there. So, and it's interesting, like his running mate is always changing. Like he would have had Robert Woods this season, and it would have been a scary proposition if they had Woods, Beckham, and Kupp. But alas, it's going to be just himself and Beckham. And should point out that Beckham's among 9 players that the Rams are going to be missing for COVID reasons in the next game. So as much as this was a good win for them, they still have to steady the ship in that regard. One word on DeAndre Hopkins, Keane. Unfortunately, an offshoot of that game was that he's going to miss 6 weeks, they're thinking. So he's going to have knee surgery. And yeah, 6 weeks is the prospective time he's going to be out, which would mean, short of making a Super Bowl, we're probably not going to see him again this season, which is a shame because the Cardinals had a really good thing going there and injuries have just hurt them this year.
Yeah, I think he probably will be back for the divisional round, would he? You're probably right. Either way, it's just a horrible thing, especially knee injuries like this, because we say 6 weeks, but since it's 6 weeks, I assume there's a meniscus damage or a cartilage damage involved in this, and because of surgery, that's more than likely what it is, which means the 6 weeks isn't the major issue. It's the longer aspect of it, the longer term aspect of it, and which means if you start slowing guys down, like guys like Anquan Boldin and Larry Fitzgerald, we saw what they were like over the second half of their careers. Still very effective receivers, but definitely a step slower than what they were earlier in the year. Look at Odell. Odell's still a step slower than he was before his ACL tear, and that's because of that cartilage and meniscus damage that he would have suffered. So it's concerning for me more for the long term than it is for this year. But if we do look at it just in the context of this year, I think the Cardinals were the best chance of us having a truly great team this year. And then all those injuries just completely derailed the season. We thought they were going to come back and be hot now for the remainder of the year. But now you're looking at Christian Kirk, you're looking at AJ Green, you're looking at Rondale Moore, and James Conner has been fantastic. So that's still a really, really good team. But you do feel like without DeAndre Hopkins, there's just an edge there that they'll be missing that other teams will have. Like if they go against the Bucs and you're facing Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Rob Gronkowski and Leonard Fournette, like suddenly they've got that one extra weapon that you don't have.
Yeah, and speaking of, we'll move on to number 3 in the pick 6. And among that galaxy of stars, my guy, Rashad Perryman, shining brightest of all, Keane, getting the key touchdown at the end. And obviously only afforded this opportunity because Antonio Brown was being Antonio Brown. And the Bucs have some decisions to make in terms of how they're going to manage their roster and accommodate all these guys, because, you know, who can you really trust down the stretch? I know Brown came up big for them in the Super Bowl, but he's just such an unreliable piece of this jigsaw where you just can't be sure he's going to not do something stupid off the field and jeopardize matters. But odd that Perryman shone up ultimately in what was an enthralling game between the Bills and the Bucks. What were your main takeaways from that one?
What a fascinating career Rashad Perryman has had, because he looked so, so good at different points. And like obviously when he came in initially with Baltimore, he was an absolute disaster and completely lost and didn't know what was going on. But then it looked like he'd figured it out during his previous stint with the Bucks, and he makes that play at the end of the game, and it's a fairly routine, simple play, but it also just shows off his athleticism, where he runs across the field and then turns upfield into space, and it's a guaranteed touchdown because nobody's catching him. It's another weapon where he's not as good as Antonio Brown. He's nowhere near as good as Antonio Brown. But if you put him on a field as your fourth or fifth receiver, you're probably going to get the same impact that you'd get as having Antonio Brown there, because he'll do the same with those 3 or 4 passes that are there. The only difference is, with Antonio Brown there, Brady can go to Brown 15 times if he wants to. You can't really go to Perryman 15 times if you want to. So it does take away from their dynamism a little bit. But from that game specifically, fascinating. Fascinating, fascinating game, because it looked like, it, for all intents and purposes, it was another game where the Bills get their shortcomings showed up against a good team. In the first half, they were decimated and destroyed, really. And Josh Allen was making mistakes, but Josh Allen was also the whole offense, because they just did not run the ball at all. Like literally the first time a team has not run the ball with a running back in 40 years or whatever it was. But even then, like, if you make that change, maybe that helps a little bit, but it just did feel like you were watching a team that was a different class. Like the Buccaneers were just that level ahead of the Bills in terms of their cohesion, in terms of everything they were doing. And I know the Bills came back in the fourth quarter and they almost pulled off an incredible comeback, but it felt like the Bucks are just kind of shooting themselves in the foot a little bit there too. It became a little bit more passive on defense. They sat back a little bit more. Offensively, they were a little bit reckless at what they were doing and trying to run out the clock. So I think if you replayed that game a couple of more times, this would probably be the closest the Bills would get. With that said, like it's rare a quarterback can be asked to drop back and throw exclusively, and Josh Allen did relatively well when you consider the whole game. When you consider the first half alone, it was not good. But like if the Bills come back in with a better game plan, with a smarter game plan, and you get the right breaks on a given day, then yeah, maybe they can turn up and win this team. Fortunately for them, the AFC looks like it's going to be an easier path than the NFC, so they might not have to play a team of this caliber again the remainder of the year.
Yeah, like a lot of people you'll find were picking this as the Super Bowl matchup, and I don't think it'd be a huge amount of confidence in either team necessarily getting there. Maybe a bit premature to dismiss the Bucks, but to me the Bucks just look bored, like they're just waiting for the playoffs, you know, much like last year where they kind of, I know they've hit probably better heights in this regular season than last, but you know, I just think they want to get into the meat of it now and get into the postseason and really show their stuff, and I think that ultimately will be what happens. They're still probably the team to beat in the NFC. On to number four in the pick six, and our guy Justin Herbert, Keane, who's been gone a little bit quiet. We were giving the Chargers the big sell in the early parts of the season, saying they're possibly the best team in the league, and he's one of the most incredible rookies last year to hit the NFL at the quarterback position and seamlessly into his sophomore year. And then they hit the skids a little bit, you know, injuries, as has happened to most teams, and also just bad decision making on the field. And he probably was making forcing throws that he's well capable of making, but ones that maybe veteran quarterbacks would decide against. But then he came roaring back with one of the most eye-catching touchdowns of recent years, that unbelievable bomb against the Giants. So are we back on track with Justin Herbert?
It seems like it, doesn't it? But the last time we were here, they suddenly collapsed and betrayed us. So let's not get too excited, because maybe we're the curse. But the Bengals went the opposite direction as well. So that game that we talked about a couple of weeks ago being a crossroads for both of these teams, it looks like it's been true, because the Bengals are lost to the 49ers in overtime, and whereas the Chargers have looked pretty good the last couple of weeks. I think Herbert is just so, so good. And I said it last week and wrote about it 2 weeks ago. They are the biggest threat to the Patriots in the AFC. When everything clicks with them, it's outstanding. It's a hard one to explain, because it feels like they're a team where it's not like there's one flaw. Like, you can go back and point to, hey, this offensive lineman's really bad, and when he plays badly, everything else falls apart. It's not like that. It seems to be just a disjointed element or a cohesiveness that's lacking in some games. And when it's there, they're phenomenal. When it's there, they'll destroy teams like the Giants, and they'll beat good teams in playoff scenarios. So I'm still very excited about them. Derwin James needs to be healthy on defense, though. They need Joey Bosa the same. He's been dealing with different issues over the last couple of weeks. If those guys are there on defense and Herbert's playing well and Keenan Allen's getting open, then they're a really hard team to stop. So I'd be really excited about watching them, at least, how good they'll be and how far they'll go. I'm not sure, but they're another team where, similar to the Rams, they have every single ability to beat anyone they come up against. So Endicall can be quite happy about my recommendation for him to, as a team to follow at the start of the year.
And if that was one of the throws of the season last week, we've got one of the games of the season this evening where the rejuvenated Chiefs take on the Chargers. What's your assessment on that? We know it's a massive game, but who are you leaning towards?
Okay, let's maybe try and pull myself back here, because it was the Raiders, and they basically beat the Raiders 90-20 over their two games this year, I think it was. But the Chiefs last week looked like Chiefs for the first time in a while. It actually looked like a real threat, and I know they've been winning games, but last week it felt like Patrick Mahomes was back to being the guy who scares you and intimidates you, and he hasn't been that guy for a while. And Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill were involved, and the running game was pretty good, and they had that rounded performance. Like, I don't know where the numbers really there are reflective, but the numbers are so misleading in week to week during a regular season. But either way, it feels like they're turning the corner at the right time offensively, but more importantly, the defense there has come together. Like, Chris Jones has woken up. Frank Clark is showing some signs of life again. The linebackers there, like Willie Gay, are making plays. Lajarius Sneed in the secondary. There's a lot of quality in that team, and they've sleptwalked through the first half of the season, and now is the time when you need to start ratcheting up. You need to start getting into gear, showing that little bit of intensity and accuracy that wasn't there before in advance of the playoffs. And the Chiefs look like they're setting themselves up to do that. So maybe we could be on course for a pretty great playoff picture in the AFC, even if it's not the highest of quality. It could be the greatest of drama and excitement.
Yeah, and like, it's opening up for them. We kind of dismissed them couple of months ago, maybe a couple of weeks ago. But as you said, the AFC, a bit of a smoother path for these teams to find their feet. And tonight is such a crunch game in that regard, because it's not must win, but it would make a huge statement for LA to win at home. And also the Chiefs can really copper fasten the fact that they're back on track with a win there too. So it'll be interesting, not necessarily determining the prospects of the teams long term, but I think it'll be a good indicator of where they might be going. On to number five in the pick six, and Dak Prescott, who, again, bearing out how topsy-turvy this season has been, was on, I would say, an MVP projection in the early going and has fallen some way off that. Now, I know he's had injuries, and to be honest, I don't think he was ever fully healthy off the back of the injury that put him out last year. But on the, like, I think those within Dallas were saying he's in a bit of a slump, and to use that word about your own quarterback is indicative enough. And while they're still winning games and, you know, quite comfortable in that division, there are reasons to be a bit concerned about what Prescott's going to deliver the rest of the season.
Yeah, well, he hasn't been fully healthy all year, I don't think. But more importantly, well, just as importantly, neither have his wide receivers been fully healthy together all year. Like, Michael Gallup missed like a month. CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper have played hurt at different times over the year. So and obviously Ezekiel Elliott isn't fully healthy. Tony Pollard is dealing with plantar fascia, so he missed last week as well. So the running backs are included in this. So the whole offense there has just been a little bit out of sync, and that's caused problems. But the biggest thing last week was, sometimes the NFL camera operators get lucky. They have the perfect angle for the perfect play call. And at the end of the game, the Cowboys are running out of the clock. They're trying to just quietly end this game and put it away. And Washington need a turnover, but there's no reason for the Cowboys to do anything risky, so there's no way that they're going to get a turnover. And Dak bootlegs out, the camera flips so it's behind him, and you can see it coming. And if you're watching it, and if you're watching the defense and you're not looking at the quarterback, you see the wide receiver or the tight end flash open over the middle of the field, but you also see the linebacker who's rolling underneath him. And you're like, oh yeah, that looks open to someone who doesn't follow football, thinks that's wide open. But an NFL quarterback looks at that and goes, oh yeah, if I throw this ball, it's getting picked. And then you see Dak winding up and you're going, wait, what? What are you doing? Why are you winding up? And he throws the ball and it goes straight to the linebacker, and you're kind of sat there going, what happened? Because you can say what you want about Dak. He's never been someone who makes incredibly stupid decisions. He's never been someone who misreads coverages. When he does it, he does it sparsely. But he definitely doesn't do it in moments like this, where all you need to do is control the ball. So that kind of thing really makes me concerned. Because if he starts doing that every so often, with all the other issues the Cowboys have, they're not going to get hot and go on this run that you want them to go on because of how exciting they are as a team. With that said, though, CeeDee Lamb looks everything we wanted him to be. Amari Cooper, when healthy, is so phenomenal. And Michael Gallup is still able to make big plays. Even Cedric Wilson has shown during different times this year that he can be an explosive receiver. So there's so much talent there. Like, this feels like something we're saying about a lot of teams right now, that they're all filled with inconsistency, but there's also levels of talent grouped together where they can overcome anything. So the Cowboys are kind of the NFC version of the Chargers, I guess, in that regard.
And last but not least, speaking of inconsistency, it's probably more the fact that the Browns have been consistently mediocre, but in a division where the AFC North, seemingly nobody wants to win this, and teams keep losing and winning when they shouldn't and losing when they shouldn't, it's kind of a good summation of where they're at. And the Browns somehow find themselves in the mix-up here to possibly sneak this division after just about holding on against the Ravens last weekend, but notably, Baker Mayfield is out with COVID this week, and also Kevin Stefanski is out of the picture once more. So I don't know about the Stefanski one is obviously significant, but the way Baker Mayfield's playing, clearly injured, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe Case Keenum gives them a little bit of an uptick if he can take the field this weekend.
Yeah, what a mess of a division. Like, everyone, every quarterback's hurt, every player's hurt, and people are out with COVID. It's the AFC North is kind of living up to its reputation, or not its reputation, but its history of being drama-filled. Case Keenum is a fine quarterback for a backup. He's going to come in, he'll make some mistakes, but he's got this aggressive mindset that might fit perfectly with this offense, because they'll just put everything on Nick Chubb and they'll ask Nick Chubb to carry the offense, and then Keenum can come off those bootlegs and hit deep shots downfield. The challenge for the Browns is really that they don't have anyone who can get open downfield. Jarvis Landry made a couple of plays last week. He can make plays underneath, but Donovan Peoples-Jones can only get open deep if you scheme him open. He's not going to beat a receiver one-on-one. or sorry, he's not going to beat a cornerback one-on-one the way an Odell Beckham would have. So it's a limited offense, and it's in a division where you're kind of full of limited offenses, and the team there that's the most well-rounded, that should be the best right now and the healthiest, is the Bengals. But as I mentioned previously, they lost to the 49ers last week, so you just don't know what you're getting from them, whereas the other three teams at least have the excuse of we're all banged up, our biggest players are injured or old or in decline. So it's a fascinating division, and if Lamar Jackson is healthy enough to play and be effective, you think the Ravens should still be the team that is the best there, but who knows what's going to happen now, because no Raven has been healthy all year.
That's it. I think the word on Lamar Jackson, he's still day-to-day for the moment, so I'd say it's still quite unlikely he'll take the field. And to be honest, they're playing the Packers. They're going to lose regardless, so it might be better to just sit him out and try and get him healthy for the latter part of the season. Every week, listeners to The Snap are in with a chance of winning some co-branded beanies and merch. To enter, simply select the winner in our game of the week. This time, it's the New England Patriots at Indianapolis. And I was somewhat surprised, Cian, the Colts are favoured in this game by 2.5 points. The listeners can send their picks to us at Off The Ball using the hashtag OTBSnap. But I think the Patriots getting 2.5 points, I think you'd have to go with them, no?
Yeah, I mean, what's there even to say here? They've got the better coach. They've got... I would say they've got the better quarterback. I mean, the only real fear here is Jonathan Taylor going off, but Bill Belichick has plenty of run stoppers and he knows how to stop a running game. So yeah, I mean, give me the Patriots and the points. We already did this with the Bills last week, and even though that, or 2 weeks ago, even though that game was a crazy one in a storm, it still kind of played out to what you expect, where the coaching staff had a bigger impact and they won the game. So I'll take the Patriots.
Yeah, and Tom Brady's not there anymore, but Bill Belichick still loves beating the Colts, and Deflategate still looms large, and they're going to want to stick it to them again. So I think the Patriots will just about get over the line. If you disagree or agree, get on to us. As I said, send your pick to us at Off The Ball using the hashtag OTBSnap. That's another show in the books. We'll chat to you next week.